Hello, everyone. I'm Alyssa Ellis.
Kenny Smith.
IL Conversation is presented by the ILNet, a national training and technical assistance program of ILRU, Independent Living Research Utilization, and was organized and facilitated by April. We're happy you could join us and are looking forward to a lively discussion. We have an hour and a half, so we'll start out with an introduction of our speakers. Each speaker has about 15 to 20 minutes to discuss their topic, and we'll open it up at the end for question and Q&A. We'll start with Michael O'Gorman, then go to Paul Jones, and finally Will Novarsky. We want to keep this as conversational as possible, and I know questions will come up as we go through the material, so we'll open it up for questions at the end. And I'll try to get in, if I get questions through the CART website, I will jump in when there's a break and get those asked. We definitely want to hear from folks. A little housekeeping before we start. www.april-rural.org. There may be print documents. There should be possibly a PowerPoint at the end of the IL conversation. And links to the CART are up. We are providing CART captioning services today, and that can be accessed on the website. You'll see today's IL conversation on the front page, and notice the highlight. You'll find the CART link there.
Sandy Dent, Southern Maryland, Center for Independent Living.
I'd like to ask everyone to put your phone.
Sandy Dent, Southern Maryland, Center for Independent Living.
Since this is a bridge line, it's pretty sensitive to any background noise and will pick up paper shuffling and so on. So if you could please, *6, we'll put your phone on mute. Also, I want to remind folks that cell phones and speakers
Jackie
tend to cause a lot of distortion on the line. So if you're using either and you have access to a landline, if you could possibly hang up and call back from a landline. I understand that that's not always an option, so we'll do the best we can. Once we start the Q&A part, I'll try to moderate the discussion, but if we could all just be as courteous as possible and try not to talk.
Sandy Dent.
And we'll go one question at a time. I'd like to welcome and introduce our presenters today. I'll begin by telling you about them a little.
Cindy Anzik.
Michael O'Gorman has been a leading organic farmer for over 40 years. In 1990 through 1995, he served as production manager for TKO Farms, where he pioneered the large-scale production of baby salad greens. In 1996, he became the first farm manager for Mission Organics, managing the growing for the Earthbound Farms label. And in 1998, he became founder and president of Agroproductos del Cabo, where he oversaw 2,500 acres of tomatoes, basil, and mixed vegetables in Baja California for the U.S. market. Michael is the executive director of the Farmer Veteran Coalition, which has been at the forefront of efforts to connect military veterans with careers in agriculture. FVC honors the farming path of each individual veteran and equally supports employment and self-employment. A little quote from Michael. During the first 5 years, he worked to make farming a visible opportunity for veterans. Now our focus is helping those who have chosen this field to successfully launch their businesses. Our next presenter is Paul Jones. He is manager of the National AgriBility Project and the Indiana AgriBility Project, USDA-funded programs for agricultural workers with disabilities, which are administered through the Breaking New Ground Resource Center at Purdue University. Been a member of the Purdue Agricultural Safety and Health Program staff since 1998, and has also done a significant amount of farm safety work related to Old Order Anabaptist groups, such as the Amish. Paul also managed grant sponsored by the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, the Indiana State Department of Health, and NEC Foundation of America. In addition to program management, Paul specializes in resource development, including print, electronic, and audiovisual material. And our third presenter is Will Mavarsky, who is officially retiring, I believe you said, August, currently enlisted in the Army. Stateside, he became interested in IL and then worked for several years with SILS, advocating for a regional VA office to form partnerships. Bill later returned to military service, recently returning from Afghanistan, and is currently an infantry officer stationed at Fort Riley, Kansas. So, again, we're here today to talk about farmers and veterans, veterans in agriculture, and I'd like to turn it over to Michael O'Gorman to start the call.
Thank you, Alyssa, and thank you, April, for hosting this important conversation. As you said, I'm the founder and director of the Farmer Veteran Coalition. We began this project for after two events that we noticed that led me to start to leave my career in production agriculture to start the project. The first was a report that came out in 2006 by the Carthy Institute of the University of New Hampshire that showed a very disproportionate number of the fatalities in both the wars in both Iraq and Afghanistan were from service people coming from small rural communities across the United States. So it really pointed to the fact that our all-voluntary military is now almost 50% rural and compared to only 16% of the population. The second was we did a study, myself and some friends got together and decided we wanted to do something about this, and we did a study and we found out in 2008 that there were 40,000 organizations in the United States with the name veteran in the title. So it's ostensibly there to assist veterans, but there was none, not one, that was helping veterans transition into agriculture. And there was none with the emphasis or the focus on helping veterans return to our rural communities. So off we ran. That first year, it took me to look and find 9 veterans who were interested in agriculture. And now, almost 6 years later, we have a network of 2,852 that have contacted us from all 50 states, each of the U.S. territories, and many actively serving in several parts of the country overseas. We have our national office in Davis, California, with 8 staff people here, and we have 5 staff people outside of California. Of the 13, 10 of them are veterans, and just our effort has really paid off in both the raised awareness of the need for support of veterans returning to rural communities, of the opportunities that they have in agriculture, and of a tremendous groundswell of interest that many of them have in either returning to the farms they grew up in or grew around, or just beginning and launching an initial career in agriculture. We're also very happy to see the support we've received from the USDA in the 2014 Farm Bill gives a definition, a legal definition of a veteran farmer, establishes a veteran agricultural liaison position, and has tremendous support throughout a number of programs for veterans in reduced rates for interest rates in lending, and priority for a number of conservation programs and other funding programs. It also earmarks funding for several of the competitive grants that groups go after to support beginning farmers, and prioritizes working with veterans. The services we provide, one of our signature projects is a fellowship fund. And this is important for this group because this fund is primarily targeted veterans who have come back from their service with what we call a service-connected disability. So it could be a visible or an invisible wound directly related to their military service. And since April 2011, we've awarded $400,000 in small grants ranging from $5,000 to $20,000 to these veterans, some of them with fairly pronounced physical injuries, and that have actually gone forward and succeeded in farming. We also are really excited about a new project we have. In December of 2012, the state of Kentucky launched a program, a label that they're including for veterans within their state under their Kentucky Proud label that they that supports Kentucky farmers. And so any veteran in Kentucky would was able to and has been able to sign up, 60 of them, to use a label called Homegrown by Heroes to put on their product that they sell. And we've reached an agreement with the state of Kentucky and have a licensing agreement and are able now to license any veteran of any era in all 50 states that's farming, ranching, or fishing to sell their product as long as they served in the military and have an honorable general discharge and they're 50% owner and operator of their farm or ranch or fishing operation. So we're really excited about the Homegrown by Heroes campaign. We've had 100 veterans. We just launched it nationally a month ago, and we already have 100 veterans with representing about $10 million in aggregated annual sales that have signed up to use this label. And about a quarter of them have finished the complete process to use the label, but the rest, it takes just a couple weeks to walk them through there. We also do career development because, as you mentioned, Alyssa, we support both employment and employment and understand that most people in agriculture, at least in the household, they combine on-farm and off-farm income, and that farming may be a secondary part-time income, and for many of the disabled veterans, it's an income alongside a disability income that they may be receiving for their injuries. Four of the people we have working outside of our office are what we call subject matter experts. They're all military young veterans. One has his degree in food law, and we give free legal assistance to any veterans that sign up and become a member of FBC. We have a second who's an injured veteran himself from the Battle of Fallujah in Iraq, and he's a certified financial planner, and he helps with business planning for veterans from his home and farm in Nebraska. We have a veteran, she calls herself a Vet Squared. She's a doctor of veterinary medicine, and she served in the Army Veterinary Corps, and she helps with food safety planning for veterans that come into our program, and it's also a service we do for anybody that signs up with the Homegrown by Heroes label. And the fourth member of the staff from Iowa is also a young attorney and a Coast Guard veteran, and he helps give advice to veterans on how to access the new menu of USDA benefits that are available. FBC feels very strongly about collaboration. We've had tremendous partnership with AgriBility and all the members of the disability service community, including April, and Goodwill and Easter Seals and some of the funders. And that's been a very, very important part for us, that collaboration to help reach and get the best benefits for any of the disabled veterans we work with. We're also forming chapters around the country. We're trying to hold back the floodgates because we get a lot of inquiries, and we actually have planned that as early as the end of this week, we will have a template for organizing chapters in different states. It's really important to us that each of these chapters has as one of their key board members and founders someone from the disability community because of the large number of veterans that are disabled. And then one final thing I will mention is that we do have plans. We've actually finalized the plans, the initial plans for it. We got some of the very initial funding. That we are going to hold the first national conference for veterans in agriculture service providers in Des Moines, Iowa at Drake University in partnership with the Agricultural Law Center at Drake University. It's going to be after elections and before Thanksgiving, so the dates are November 13th to 15th. And we welcome everybody to stay in touch with us and look forward to your participation in that event. So other than that, I could give a little anecdote that unlike most traditional groups that have been helping veterans who become helping farmers who become disabled during the lifespan of their career, we're working to help veterans who are coming into agriculture already with a disability, and in many cases seeing agriculture as part of their what heals both their mind and their body and their soul, and in many cases their family, and it's been a unbelievably rewarding experience for me to get to participate and work with these young men and women. So thank you.
Take it away, Paul.
Okay, thank you. Again, I'm Paul Jones. I'm from the National AgriAbility Project, and we're headquartered here at Purdue University. First, I just want to express our thanks from AgriAbility to Michael and Farmer Veteran Coalition for all their work and for their willingness to partner with groups like us. We've really benefited from a lot of the things that Michael and his staff have done, and we look forward to continuing to collaborate. In fact, I'll discuss a position that we're going to hopefully staff here soon that the Farmer Veteran Coalition is assisting with also. So in general, I wanted to share just a little general information at the beginning about what AgriAbility is and what AgriAbility does. I've participated in one of these IL conversations before, just in terms of AgriAbility itself, but I realize not everybody may have participated in that and you may not be familiar. So just a little bit of background on what AgriAbility is and does, and then some more specific information about some of the services and resources that we specifically have focused on veterans. So our mission at AgriAbility is to focus on disability issues in agriculture. And just in that one statement, we've got a couple terms that are really begging for some definition, because both the term disability and the term agriculture represent very wide continuums in terms of what's included. So in terms of disability, obviously we deal with things like spinal cord injuries and amputations that are the more visible types of disabilities. But if we look at our statistics, some of the things we deal most with are issues like arthritis and back problems that people have in agriculture. Some of those may not rise to the level of what the ADA considers a disability, but they're still impairments that can limit somebody's ability to work in, especially in agriculture when it's so physically demanding. In fact, our most recent publication deals with back health in agriculture and has proven to be fairly popular already. So not only visible disabilities, but also things like chronic diseases, multiple sclerosis, heart issues, and behavioral and mental health issues also. In the more distant past, we focused primarily on physical issues, but in recent years, we've recognized to a greater degree the importance of issues like post-traumatic stress disorder and other mental and behavioral health issues. So we're learning in that area. We're expanding out into those areas too. So that's something we're going to continue to work on. So not only is disability on a wide continuum, but agriculture also. You know, traditional agriculture, if you said farming to somebody, they might think of row crops, you know, corn and soybeans and wheat and cotton, or livestock, you know, somebody raising swine or ranching or something like that. But if we look at more recent trends, we've got things like the local food movement, organic produce, you know, smaller scale agriculture, hydroponics, which is essentially growing plants without soil, aquaculture, raising fish, or aquaponics, which is a combination of raising plants and fish together. A lot of niche markets, specialty livestock, things like beekeeping all fall within the agriculture continuum. So we have to kind of keep abreast ourselves of some of these new trends, and some of these are possibly more suited for veterans or people that are not entrenched in agriculture or have a strong family background or a strong, you know, financial stake in agriculture with a lot of land. A lot of these can be smaller enterprises where you can, you know, have a couple acres or not even any land at all. You can do some of these inside a building, a garage, or, you know, some other facility. A little history on agribuilty. We started in the 1990 Farm Bill with the authorization, and then the appropriation of funds came in 1991. Originally 8 projects, and now we have 20 projects, funded projects, I should say, covering 22 states. We have some affiliate projects which were previously funded but are not any longer, but still provide some services. And we had projects in existence even before agribuilty officially started in states like Vermont, Indiana, Iowa. So some of those go back to the 60s. Our program here at Purdue started in the late 70s. In terms of the services we provide, the direct services come at the state and local levels. And I noticed that we had at least two people from Agribility, Tom Yonkman and Kenny Smith from Vermont, on. So perhaps they might be able to share some, you know, during our discussion period about what they do and in general and specifically related to veterans. But the state projects do provide the direct services to farmers, ranchers, other agricultural workers, veterans. They go out on the farms. They, you know, talk about what issues need to be dealt with, barriers, what kinds of technologies are needed. At the national level, we support the state projects. And we also provide some limited services to consumers that are in states that don't have agribility projects. So some of the resources we provide at the national level, a lot of those are available on our website, which is www.agribility.org. So if you're not familiar with that site, I would recommend you take a little tour. And one of the things that we focused on heavily in the past and continue to focus on is assistive technology. We realize that for people with physical impairments and other impairments, that sometimes it's just the right tool that can make the job easier or even possible at all. So our assistive technology database called the Toolbox has over 1,000 products that can assist somebody with a disability in agriculture. So I recommend taking a little look at that, seeing what's available, so you can refer your own consumers to that. We produce publications. I mentioned the back impairment resource. And we do webinars on about a two-month period, every 2 months. And the one that's scheduled for tomorrow is very relevant to our topic today. It's titled Suicide Awareness with a Focus on Veterans and Rural Americans. If you want to participate in that, today is essentially the last day. The webinar is tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. If you go to our website, agribility.org, and go to the latest news module, it's at the top right. There's the first story is on this webinar. If you click on that and follow the link, you can get to the registration form. But again, you'll need to do that today. We do have quite a good registration list at this point, so we're encouraged by that, and also, you know, it just speaks to the topic that this is something that is important to a lot of people. We do a lot of conferences and workshops with Agribility, and we've had speakers like Michael O'Gorman and also Billy Altum from April. Both of them are on our advisory team. So we get together once a year to talk face to face and do a lot of networking with Billy and other groups, including the Centers for Independent Living. So moving on just to some of the specific veterans-related services that we provide in Agribility. historically, and speaking partly just from the Indiana perspective, in the more distant past, veteran status was not focused on heavily. I think there probably weren't as many veterans in earlier days that were interested in the beginning farmer aspect of agriculture. And, you know, a lot of veterans that we dealt with were coming out of the Vietnam era, you know, or even the Korean War era. So I think the culture of the time probably did not lend itself to identifying as a veteran probably as closely as it does today. I think there's a lot greater focus on veterans' issues in the general public and a greater sense of public support. Combined with organizations like Michael's Farmer Veteran Coalition and others around the country that are recognizing, you know, the importance of agriculture for veterans. So this is becoming an increasingly important topic for us at AgriBuildi. And just looking at some of the barriers, I think, to those that are interested, that are veterans, you know, the signature disabilities of the current conflicts are typically identified as post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury. And there are definitely potential benefits for those with those types of disabilities for working in agriculture. There can be a potential schedules. There is also kind of a mission mindset between agriculture and the military, and I think that can be something that has a good crossover effect, or can at least. The structure of agriculture is not as rigid as many vocations, which can be a benefit. And I think the flip side of that is that there is uncertainty with agriculture. So things like if you would benefit from a more rigid schedule, that's not always the case. Greater flexibility is not only you know, a benefit, but can be a problem too. And there's also, of course, uncertainty about things like income. You know, other issues, obviously physical disabilities on veterans you know, the visible disabilities are important in addition to the invisible ones like post-traumatic stress and TBI. We're seeing a greater percentage of service members surviving catastrophic injury than in the past. So, you know, things like spinal cord injuries, amputations, a variety of mobility impairments.
The rest of the report you gave me.
So, you know, even things like arthritis or issues with you know, problems with carrying heavy loads in combat situations. So those issues are still important. Some of the barriers in terms of agriculture that I see veterans needing to face, which are not unusual for anybody that is interested in farming, is funding. And Michael mentioned his fellowship fund, which is definitely you know, something that's needed, because if you know anything about agriculture and have heard anything about just land prices themselves, they're fairly astronomical in a lot of areas. If you add on top of that equipment, depending on what scale of agriculture you're talking about, and it can be a fairly insurmountable financial issue. So that's something that we try to help with in terms of pointing people to resources that are available. AgriBuildi cannot provide direct funding or equipment, but we keep abreast of you know, beginning farmer programs, some of the farm service agency programs that are available to help new farmers or existing farmers. You know, the knowledge barrier can be important too, in terms of not only production techniques, but I think also expectations.
Kathy Newsom.
Jessica.
I think some people come into the agriculture thinking it's kind of a idyllic situation, and it can definitely be, as I said, a beneficial environment for many people, and obviously something that a lot of people really love. But if you're not prepared for, you know, some of the issues, some of the extraordinarily long hours and difficult working conditions, I think that's something that, that is a barrier also that we need to be aware of. Again, some of the specific services that we've provided up to date, a webinar not only tomorrow, but we've got one archived on Veterans and Agriculture Military 101. So if that's something you would like to learn more about, you can go to our website again and look on the online training and the archived webinars link. And that was held about 2 years ago, but some of that information I think would be very relevant to today. We've had community of interest conference calls on things like traumatic stress disorder traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder. Those are archived on our website. We've held conferences specifically for veterans and professionals working with veterans. Our national workshop has had tracks specifically related to veterans and speakers like Michael and Josh Belisle, who spoke at our most recent conference, a military veteran with significant disabilities, who's also the community spokesperson for the Baltimore and Indianapolis Colts. And I would just mention that our next national workshop for agribility is in Rochester, New York, next fall, April 13th through the 16th. So we again intend to have some veterans topics at that workshop. We've participated in Michael's Farmer Veteran Coalition workshops on empowering women veterans, which have been excellent. I did not attend myself, but from our staff's perspective, they were very beneficial. I mentioned before a job opening, and we're trying to fill a position for someone to be our Farmer Veteran Agribility Outreach Coordinator. We've been actually had this position open for several months. We do want to get a veteran, and it would be somebody that's interested in both veterans' issues and agriculture. We would have them be doing expanded outreach, some more intense assistance to our state projects to help them get their veteran services up and running or improved, and also provide greater presence at things like public awareness events that relate to veterans' issues. So anybody that's possibly interested in that, my email is jonesp, J-O-N-E-S-P, at purdue.edu, and I'd be glad to hear from you or any of your consumers that might be interested or qualified in that type of a position. Be glad to discuss that also during our Q&A. One other program I would mention that we're involved with is the Returning Veterans to Agriculture program that's sponsored by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And the website for that is RV2A.org. Stands for Returning Veterans to Agriculture, and that includes a variety of resources that would be good for anybody interested in beginning farming, especially veterans, in addition, of course, to Michael's Farmer Veteran Coalition site, which has a wealth of excellent resources. I was just looking on the Farmer Veteran Coalition site prior to this call, and under their resource page and their education and training opportunities, there are just some really excellent programs listed there that if you're interested in more education and training, that's just a great place to look. So I think I'll end for now. And again, I'd be glad to answer any questions related to this, or we'd be also welcoming any comments from our state agribility project in Vermont, if they have anything that they feel is relevant. So I will turn it back over to Alyssa.
Okay, we are going to, are there any questions at this point, very briefly, before we move on to Will Mazarski? Okay, hearing none, take it away, Will.
Oh, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody. As the introduction was going through, I had the privilege to come back on active duty and be able to serve with my children and such as we all went through Afghanistan. I didn't get to serve with them, but I served alongside them. I have been working within the IL field for 20 some odd years now, and how I got back on active duty and an infantry officer is a long story, and generally even longer one could tell it. However, today I'm here and I'm going to be speaking of some of the programs that are out there for people just coming out of the service, as well as some of the programs that are out there up in the VA and such. Like what Michael was saying earlier, there is about 50% of the military population are from rural areas. So farming and such is in the blood of a lot of soldiers and sailors. And out of that, very timely right now, and Bob touched right on this as well, PTSD and TBI is a huge issue for a lot of folks. And for a lot of people with PTSD, the idea of being out in a rural community, away from the hustle and bustle and such, is just plain therapeutic if you have PTSD. And with that, I'm going to be going into the different stuff. I'm going to start with the transition assistance that all of the military services offer. It's all authorized under the Transition Assistance Program, passed here a few years ago by Congress and such. What this allows is for soldiers and sailors, airmen and such, Marines, I'm just going to say service member to cover everyone. It allows them to take classes and such before they get out of the military on the military's dime. Now, some of these classes are, what are your VA benefits, how do you get a home loan, such like that. And I'll speak about that a little bit later. Some of the big stuff it talks about is the programs that are out there to help small businesses and things along that line. For instance, the Small Business Administration has a large part of this TAP program, and they will go through and talk to the service members and such and tell them about how they can create a business plan and who to talk to for loans. Now, they don't give out the loans themselves. However, they will take the service member through the program and basically hold their hand and show them, mentor them through the program and show them exactly what needs to be done. Additionally on this, there's a program called Boots to Business. And this is through Syracuse University. It's an online course, a regular college-like class on how to start small businesses. Now, I know one soldier here at Fort Riley who's actually bought himself a 40-acre farm not too far from here. He's gone through the Small Business Administration to get those loans to start up his farm. And he's used the program to do a business plan. He went out and talked to banks, showed resources, his ability to sit there and work, and he got funded for it. Now, in addition to that, the Transition Assistance Program talk about the VA's new e-benefits program. And if you don't know what the e-benefits are, it's sort of like a clearinghouse for all the Veterans Administration programs and services, but it also links to other places like USDA and such, relevant to our topic here. It also will link you to like unemployment sites and such at different states, and it'll also talk about the state employment agencies and their funding and such to help folks get jobs. In addition to that, the VA will also sit there and assist veterans, soldiers with home loan guarantees. Now, out of this, I can tell you for sure that you can do farms and such, because I personally am buying a farm up in Michigan right now going through this program. And what this will do is will eliminate closing costs for certain veterans and such, and funding fees and money down and such. This allows, from a business standpoint for farms, like the soldier I was talking about over here at Fort Riley, he was able to get a VA loan on that, no money down for the house type thing. And because he was service-connected, had a disability, he was able to have no funding fees and stuff like that, which meant he had more capital to actually turn into his business. Now, that might not seem like much, but when you're starting out with nothing, even a little bit can matter a whole lot. Now, going on as well, the GI Bill, both the post 9/11 GI Bill and the original Montgomery GI Bill, both those two bills or laws out there are to help service members go to college and such once they're out of service. Now, what this also does, it allows for other things like there is a farming co-op, I believe, that is available as well that you can use through the post 9/11 GI Bill. Meaning that if someone wants to learn how to work a farm, you know, do a mentorship type thing, the VA will actually pay them to, on top of whatever they get paid through the farmer, to go out there and work on the farm and learn how to be more efficient at it before they then apply for their own small business type thing. What this generally means is a 4-year degree for any service member. Now, what this does is it will pay up to, I think, $17,000 right now a year for private schools. I know my son, Eric, he just got accepted out to a school at Universal Studios in California for like $17,000 a year, and the VA's paying for all of it, and this is one happy daddy to be able to say that one. But the GI Bill will sit there and go through and teach you. I know MSU, Michigan State University, has a huge program trying to get some veterans in there to do some of the farming things. I know Kansas State University does as well. They're very agriculturally related, and getting service members out there to apply and use their GI Bill for that is very beneficial. In addition to this, the service member, if they are severely disabled or so, can transfer their benefits to someone else. For instance, if I no longer could use my benefits, I could transfer it to my wife, and she could use the full advantage of that 4-year degree for herself along those lines. Another part of the VA is the vocational rehab and employment. Now, this is for any service member who has a greater than 20% service-connected disability. This will tie in as well to the total amount of education that the service member is authorized through the GI Bill. But what this can mean is even more hands-on training and expert assistance through rehab counselors, going through and finding the right jobs and going through and getting the right training or mentorship. And there's just a variety of services that are out there to assist. Now, I'm coming up to the end of what I was going to be covering it on here. I know there's probably a lot of questions. One thing that I want to stress is the VA just approved to their burn tip registry. This will keep it off topic, but for all of us Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, that's a big thing. It falls under something similar to the Vietnam Agent Orange program. A lot of us were exposed to a lot of certain chemicals and such, and I would highly encourage you to put this out to your boards or whatever and get this broadcast through your constituents and your different members. And with that, I will turn it back over. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you guys so much. Will, really quickly, if you will send me something on what you were just talking about regarding the Agent Orange, if you can send that to me, I'll get it out to the April listserv.
Oh.
Okay.
You got it. Yep.
Okay. I will open it up for questions. Does anybody have any questions? Remember to take your phone off mute.
Just pick up the receiver.
Good afternoon. This is Kenny Smith from Vermont. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Michael, Paul, and Will. Thank you for your presentation. We were fortunate, myself and Tom Youngman here in the Vermont AgriBility office. We are a part of the Vermont Center for Independent Living, and it's already within our protocol to work with veterans. But we were really inspired at the National AgriBility Training Workshop to meet Michael and get fired up about helping veterans. And we've already taken action here in Vermont and are working with Michelle Fannin-Seal from the Farmer Veteran Coalition. And I just wanted to say we're well on our way to making the moves to form a chapter, And it's been very, very rewarding to pull folks together for this cause.
Great.
Kenny, Michael here. I've been following your progress. Michelle's been sending on the reports. Also got your own application for Homegrown by Heroes, and we're really excited. I think Vermont's one of those states where a lot of it's affordable. Some of the types of farming don't require a huge amount of land, and there's ways for people to get in. A lot of support for small farmers there, so we're really excited.
Yes, thank you, Michael. We're fortunate in Vermont with our size that we do have a close-knit farming community. And, you know, in the beginning when I first approached this, I felt somewhat inadequate compared to some of my farming brethren out there with acres and acres and vast crops. I'm just a small-scale farmer trying to do a homestead thing. And I also felt a bit uncomfortable about the Homegrown by Heroes label, you know, not having been a infantryman who served in deployment. I felt a little uncomfortable, but then I decided it was best to support the label for those brothers and sisters of mine in the military who have served in deployment.
We hear that from even from people that serve. Some people are hesitant about the label, and when we explain that this is the wording of the label makes it very clear and understandable. The you know, the market surveys have shown that it's the most easily recognized wording for someone to know that this is about veterans and supporting those that served. At the very least, your service took a number of years out of a normal career development in agriculture. Getting started early and is a big plus, and so this is a way for equalize the playing field a little bit.
Yes, and I just wanted to add that it doesn't take a whole lot for those folks out there. We started our outreach efforts with just a little bit of research and then some outreach by email, and it doesn't take long to get folks inspired to do this. I just wanted to share that. We've got a massive outpouring of interest here in Vermont now for both the Farmer Veteran Coalition and Homegrown by Heroes. Thanks a lot for hearing from me.
Thank you, Kenny.
Okay, do we have any other questions?
This is Paul Jones again. I just wanted to point something out that came to mind when Kenny was talking, and I didn't really, when I was describing what agribility is, I didn't mention that natural connection, I guess, between independent living centers and agribility, because every one of the grants requires a partnership between the land grant university and the state and at least one nonprofit disability services related organization. And in some states, like Vermont, that is a center for independent living. In fact, several of the states have formal subcontracts with their centers for independent living as partners on the agribility project. So I encourage you, if you're, you know, if you're a SIL and you're interested in this topic, make sure you see who is the agribility project in your state. You might be able to form a, you know, a formal relationship with that group, and you know that would, I think, definitely enhance your ability to serve veterans as well as other people in agriculture. And if you don't have an agribility project in your state, that would be an excellent opportunity to express your interest to somebody in the land grant university that they should be you know, getting out there and putting in a proposal and possibly including you as a subcontractor on that.
Great follow-up, Paul. Thank you. Okay, are there any other questions out there? We have a little bit of time left, so we want to make sure everyone's questions are addressed. So now's the time to ask or comment. If you have something you want to add to the discussion, please do so. Well, and I did not get any questions through the cart link. So I just want to make sure I haven't missed anybody. I don't want to end early and have lost some folks. Okay, do any, Michael, Paul, or Will, do you guys have anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I'll make a few comments, Alyssa.
Okay.
One of the things that's, I think, is most important that we do, and we can help, any of your organizations that are approached by veterans that want to go into agriculture, look at us as a partner. Of our staff, I'm the only one with a lifelong career in agriculture. But you won't find many nonprofits run by anybody with my level of experience. But we also have a lot of advisors and partners in the agricultural community. So Farm Bureau, National Farm Bureau, as American Farm Bureau Federation, the Farm Credit Services, and the National Farmers Union really are the three giants in.
Steve Barrow, Board of Directors of the Montana Independent Loop.
In the agricultural world, and they all partner with us. So we can really help match any veteran that comes in with find support for them with somebody that really knows about the type of agriculture they're looking at. And another thing is that a number of veterans, some of the disabilities that we've seen make the veterans less interested in going out and interacting in the public. I'm thinking of a veteran who I visited on a farm recently who had a serious injury to his head and a pretty large and visible metal plate in the over part of his head and his skull, and a tracheotomy from the life-saving service that the medics arrived in. He just wasn't comfortable going out and being stared at, and so wanted to do something on a pretty small farm where he could stay home. He's fine with going into town, but if it wasn't something that he had to do all the time, he was real comfortable with that. So a lot of the disabilities have to do around just personal choice, where someone is feeling comfortable to become productive again. And some of these veterans have income from their disabilities that don't even need a job, but just they personally require and need something to contribute to serve and contribute to be productive.
Okay. Are any of you aware of any businesses that retrofit existing farm equipment?
We have one veteran we work with, Alyssa, that is a double amputee. He lost his right leg and right arm. Most tractors have both the foot and hand controls are all right-handed. And John Deere came in and retrofitted at no cost to him his tractor. So we're finding that the community, the agricultural community, is interested in helping.
Give me 1 second. Wonderful.
And there are specific companies. I think probably the leading company for assistive technology related to large farm equipment is here in Indiana, Life Essentials. And they produce a number of different types of lifts. Get somebody into a tractor that has a mobility impairment. They also do hand controls for those that can't use lower limbs to operate foot pedals and that type of thing, and fabricate a variety of different types of other assistive devices, including all-terrain scooters. But if somebody's interested in that whole topic, I'd refer them back to our Toolbox Assistive Technology database. There are various categories related to different types of equipment, not only tractors, but utility vehicles like John Deere Gators and all-terrain vehicles and skid steer loaders. And so there's information not only on the particular devices, but on companies that would provide some kind of assistive device or adaptation to making those more accessible to people with disabilities. And, also anytime there's a question about adapting equipment, we'd be glad to talk to you about that. We've got an 800 number, 800-825-4264. And that's answered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by somebody. And so that's another resource that you might make note of.
Definitely. Go ahead.
I was going to change the topic, so if you wanted to say something else on that, please do.
I was just going to say I will put together, a fact sheet with all the various websites and organizations that have been mentioned today and put it on the April website so folks have something that they can put their hands on and get to these places quickly.
That'd be great.
Go ahead.
The other thing I wanted to just touch on was Michael's comment related to the importance of collaborative relationships with other organizations. And I think that's a key to what we do at AgriBility. And also I know at the Farmer Veteran Coalition is just collaborating, because I think we realize that none of us have all the information or resources to help everybody's issues. So networking, any way you can network with us, with your AgriBility projects or Farmer Veteran Coalition or some of these other groups, we're really all about that. So we would encourage any kinds of partnerships or collaborative relationships like that. So feel free to contact us on issues like that also.
Wonderful. Okay, anybody else have any questions?
This is Kenny Smith from Vermont AgriBility, the Vermont Center for Independent Living, and I'll jump back in again. On that same line of thinking, I just wanted to mention we didn't have a blueprint when we started outreach. We have
Phil Corona from Independence First in Milwaukee.
We had guidelines, and we had the guidance of Michelle Fannin Steele and the Farmer Veteran Coalition, but really we just went about picking out what seemed the most relevant agencies. And I just wanted to say on that note that yes, the USDA has been very receptive and a very willing partner, but we had really a great accommodation and hosting of our event that we put together, sponsored by the Vermont Center for Independent Living and Vermont AgriBility. We call it the first Vermont Farmer Veteran Forum, and it deserves mention that the Veterans Administration, the Department of Veterans Affairs in White River Junction, Vermont, really went out of their way to accommodate us. And I think it's worth mentioning also that this is probably a good time to, as we focus on these collaborative relationships, it's a good time to mend fences and, try and take a fresh, new, positive outlook to this. The VA is getting beat up in the press. It could happen to any of us, and I think it's a good time to take a fresh look at the VA. They seem a really willing partner here in Vermont, and we're looking forward to our collaboration with them. We also have excellent support from the Vermont Farm Service and the Small Business Administration, the Vermont Department of Labor, and interest from Voc Rehab as well. So there's any number of different willing partners out there, and we'll be glad to share our experience with other folks as well who may want to contact us. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kenny. I appreciate that. Okay. Anybody we missed? Now's the time. It doesn't have to be a question. If you have an experience with farming or veteran and you want to share it with us, please do so. Okay, well, hearing no one, it is 3 o'clock, so we're short of our 3:30, 3 o'clock my time, I'm sorry. Does anyone have anything to add before I do my closing notes?
Okay. Archived?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Will the call be archived?
Yes, it will be. The CART transcription will be on the April website as well as the audio recording. All right. I'd like to thank you all for being here today. Thanks to our CART folks and our friends at Skill in Kansas for recording our call. Again, I'd like to invite you to visit the April website where you'll find the documents discussed today and an archived copy plus a transcript of the presentations. Just go to www.april-rural.org and look for IL Conversations. If you have any questions about today's discussion, you can reach me at april-elissa@sbcglobal.net. This IL Conversation is presented by the IL Net, which is operated by the Independent Living Research Utilization Program at TIRR Memorial Hermann in partnership with the April and Nickel. Support for the presentation was provided by the U.S. Department of Education Rehabilitation Services Administration. No official endorsement of the Department of Ed should be inferred. Again, thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Alyssa.
Done.